Sure. I'm going in. I've already started the show. Hi, everyone. This is Billy Crash with you here on The Last Knock. Johnny Numb is unfortunately not here tonight. He's playing with his cats again, as always. But we have two super amazing guests who we've had on before. I'm glad they're back on. Mark and Christian, they are the dynamic duo, not only behind Cryptic Pictures, and now, talk about diversification, Cryptic Pictures distribution. But they made one of, and I don't say it lightly, and for all of you know how I grade movies, you know I'm not being light at all, made one of the greatest found footage films of all time, and that is Mortal Remains. It is very chilling. If you haven't seen it, you must. And beyond them, we have a super special guest, the great J.B. Destiny. And we're going to talk about him as the writer and one of the actors in Iron City Ass Kickers, which was a George A. Romero directed short, actually, 20 minutes. We're going to talk more about that, why it relates to all this, and I'm going to let it go run amok now. Mark, Christian, JB, thank you all for being here. This is fantastic. So where the hell do we want to begin with all of this madness? Because there's a lot going on.
Well, it started back in prison.
I knew it did.
JB and I were doing some time. No. We did. JB and I were working on in Pittsburgh as PAs. You know, whatever gig we could get. JB, that we were grips. You know, wardrobe, whatever. There were a lot of movies filming in Pittsburgh in the early '90s, based on the film industry established in Pittsburgh in the '60s and '70s and '80s by George Romero and Russ Striner and those guys that actually began making movies in Pittsburgh. And that foundation was laid so that in the 90s, a lot of productions came to Pittsburgh to shoot because of its diversification of scenery. You know, there's a lot of locations that look like the 20s or like Brooklyn. So that's a huge asset. And also there were at the time tax incentives, and that's still kind of a big ongoing concern for the state of Pennsylvania, is that they're always crimping, cutting off those damn tax incentives for the filmmaker. But they were making a lot of movies in the 90s, and anybody who had any inclination of working on movies had a chance to jump in and go to work. And I actually dropped out of film school to start working on these movies because there were so many. And Mark was a buddy of mine from high school. Mark and I went to school. I was born in Pittsburgh, but Mark, we moved when I was six to Rockville, Maryland. And don't go back to Rockville.
No, I said, sorry to hear that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, Mark still lives in Gaithersburg. It could be worse. Used to be Olney, right? Mark and I hit it off in high school immediately because he was a big film buff and I wanted to make movies and he wanted to make movies. And so, you know, ever since high school, we've been just farting around with cameras every chance we got. We took TV production class in high school.
Right.
One of our buddies from TV production class, Ed Sanchez, is now known as the maker of the Blair Witch Project. So it's, you know, a friend of ours has sort of changed cinematic history inadvertently, just, you know, by virtue of being in the right place at the right time. But he's a brilliant guy too. I love Ed. But we, you know, Mark and I hit it off as students and we've been pals ever since. And Mark stayed in Maryland while I moved back to Pittsburgh. And I had kind of a connection to the Romero community anyway, because my brother Tasso was in a bunch of George's movies. So there's a lot of the people in the local film scene already kind of knew him and knew who I was, or kind of got, you know. Okay, knew the family. So I met JB working on a couple of those productions, and I think it was on The Journey. Remember, there was, I heard over the walkie this, because The Journey was a production, it's like Bollywood movie, but it was shot, produced and directed by a local filmmaker named Harish Saluja. Mm-hmm. And I think it was catered by like some relative, you know, because it was so they had wonderful tandoori and stuff coming in for lunch every day. I remember one day, JB comes over the walkie and says, are the caterers here? Are we having, is it going to be Larry Moe and Curry again? And
oh!
I said, I have to get to know this guy. And ever since, we've been partners in crime.
That is awesome. Man.
Yeah.
So JB.
That made it onto the crew shirt. I think that quote made it onto the
JB, you're a Pittsburgh native or Evans City area, or
I'm not indigenous to Pittsburgh.
Gotcha.
I'm from Virginia and South Carolina is where I grew up.
Oh, okay.
I moved to Pittsburgh when I was 18 to attend Carnegie Mellon. And then for the next 20 plus years I just didn't leave. So yeah. But so I still consider Pittsburgh my home, even though it's not my birthplace.
Gotcha. No, hey, that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine.
Then I have a question.
I have an answer.
I have a question for you, JB, and for you, Christian, and that I do not have the answer to, surprisingly, and I thought I knew almost everything about you two, but how is it then that, because when and some of you may or may not know, Christian is the sculptor for the George A. Romero bust that is at the Monroeville Mall. And
awesome.
Beautiful, very touching sculpture. If you're a Romero fan, it's very moving to see in person. And so I teared up a bit, actually, when I was videotaping your speech. Chris mentioned in his speech at the unveiling of this particular sculpture that he had a trinity growing up. And his trinity included his brother, Tasso, and Tom Savini, the makeup artist, well-known makeup artist, and George Romero. And it was a very keen way of putting that, because many of you may not know, but Christian's father is a minister. He's a reverend. So he's a Greek Orthodox priest. So I thought, wow, that's a pretty strong statement to say that that's your trinity.
Well, here's the thing. If I die and go to heaven and God looks like George Romero, I'm all set.
He doesn't look cool. like George Romero. He is George Romero.
Right.
I love it.
Well, knowing that your trinity consisted of those three guys, and knowing that you were relatively close to the Romero family, to George, and so forth, how is it that JB beat you out of becoming George's assistant?
I don't know. Timing, probably. I would have cut his brake lines or something had I known he was on his way to that audition. But no. I was just, I think, how did you end up there? You were there for many years helping the family.
Yeah I was a plus one to a girl named Marissa. She was the daughter of George's first cousin. And the thing about George and the mother, Isabel, is that they grew up in New York together. They didn't have any other siblings. So they were the closest in age as contemporaries, Isabel and George. Isabel's daughter is Marissa. I didn't know when she and I started dating that she was technically the second cousin of George. I didn't know that at all. But we fell in love. We dated during college years, and I was her plus one to a party at George's house, Halloween night, 1992. It's the first time I ever met George, and we just kind of hit it off. And so ever since then, or after that, he was asking Marissa to babysit for Andrew and Tina and things like that. And they'd say, oh, yeah, Jason could come by too. And so, George and Chris would go out. They'd come back. George and I would kind of BS for a little while. But then after a couple of years in college, Marissa and I broke up. And she told me, it's like, yeah, I don't want to see you anymore. I don't want you at my graduation ceremony. And I don't want you hanging out with George anymore.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is in Oakland. You know, it's like, well, fuck that. So I walked to George's house in Shadyside. And I told him, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, it's like, yeah, Marissa and I just broke up. And she doesn't want you and I to hang out anymore. And George told me, it's like, well, she can't. That's not really fair of her to say. Why don't we make it official? Why don't you work for me full time?
And so,
that's the thing. I wasn't dating Marissa. Otherwise, I could have.
Yeah, you blew it, man.
I missed the ad in the paper, I guess. I don't, you know. But no, George lucked into a Man Friday with JB because he kept the shit rolling for many, many years.
Yeah, JB, just, you know, for people who don't know, I mean, we all have, I think, as fans, you know, from everything that we've seen and all about, you know, Mr. Romero, he's just, like, just wonderful. And what do you have to say about the man? And, you know, well, all of you. I mean, I know, Christian, you know, worked with him as well. So tell us about George.
He was tall. So I think he was always physically larger than the people that he dealt with from grade school and things like that. So I think that he always felt awkward. He was never trying to be the popular guy because he never thought that he could be. But he didn't hold a grudge. Instead, he had like an amazing sense of humor, sometimes self-effacing, things like that. But he liked to laugh. And he was also very creative. He moved through high school quicker than most.
I think he was like moved up two grades, and by the time he was ready for college, technically, he was still like 16.
Yeah. He went to CIT when he was 16. But the thing, it's like, and Stavro mentioned Tasso and Tom. Mm-hmm. It's like George never felt awkward around those two guys. He looked at them as kind of like rock stars. Nice. And so they looked at him for maybe the same way, because he was the one that was the conductor of this electric train set of these movie sets. But George always admired both of them. So, you know, because they were like superheroes. They were walking superheroes to him. So.
Oh, wow.
He had on Night of the Living Dead, he had kind of the same thing with Tony Pantanella and Reed Scherbinsky. It was like the two crazy guys behind the camera that would blow shit up when they had to, you know. But that's what Tom and Tasso became, like the demolition crew.
I guess that's my only connection to you guys in regard to place, because I used to go to school at Slippery Rock University, mm-hmm. and I was at a party in Evans City, and you looked out the window and there's the cemetery, and I'm like, holy shit. And I'm like, what do you think of a party? I'm like, screw the party, man. We need to go in the cemetery. You know, George was there, man. He was filming Night of the Living Dead. Let's go. Yeah.
Well, here's a story. That tombstone that everyone takes their picture, that Nicholas Kramer Judy O'Day kind of peers from behind when she's... That was on the ground. I went up there in like 91 or 92, and it was on like embedded in the grass from, I think a tornado had come through the cemetery and tore out a bunch of the trees that you can see in the film, and that stone was still on the ground, and nobody had bothered to pick it up. So I went back, I think a year later, with my friend Dave Burian, who, I don't know how we did it, but we both sort of heaved that thing back onto the pedestal.
Holy shit. It back.
I think it's actually not in the right direction. It needs to be turned like a quarter turn to the... right, because you can tell in the movie it's facing the wrong way, but it's facing toward the road, and so that's where everyone takes their pictures. But since then, somebody has stolen the little pyramid off the top. So, you know,
assholes, man.
I know. Hey, that's like people stole Ed Gein's gravestone and drove it to Seattle. You know?
Yeah, I know. I mean, like,
at least they got it back.
At least they got it back. Yeah. Oh man.
It's JB. If you don't mind, Bill, I got another question
for
JB.
Go ahead.
I'm with Bill. I'm just going to interview you guys. JB, one thing I've never heard you talk about, I didn't realize that you had started with George that early in 92. That means that you may or may not have been on the set of Mr. Rogers for one reason or another. Would that be the case? Wow. And if so, do you have any Mr. Rogers stories?
But George was on the set of Mr. Rogers, but I was not. He was not on the set, I think, in the 90s. He was on the set in the late 50s, early 60s.
If he was on the set at all, I think George mostly would shoot picture. Mr. Rogers would go to a picture on the wall, and it would turn into a projection of some made or something, and George would shoot those films.
Damn.
And I think the one that he interacted with Fred Rogers the most was Mr. Rogers gets a tonsillectomy, where he goes to the hospital and he says, the nurse is very nice. And she's telling, you know, but George was freaking out because he's like, I don't know how to shoot this kind of stuff. But they
would have remained friends for many, many years. And JB, did you ever encounter Mr. Rogers? I'm just curious.
Yeah, on a side job in college, I was working at a movie theater in Squirrel Hill. And it was like a matinee show. And the theater theirs were showing kind of more artistic stuff, not really mainstream. And then Mr. Rogers walks through the door, orders some popcorn. It was a matinee show in the middle of the afternoon. So it's like sunlight cascading through the front doors. There wasn't a big audience except for him. And I was like, that's Mr. Rogers.
I met him after at the Playhouse. We had done a production of La Cage aux Folles. And Don Brockett, Chef Brockett, came out and played the commissioner. So he's out there in drag at the end of the show, waving, you know, his anatomy around. And but after the show, you know, everyone took their bows, and I was up in the fly rail. But we came downstairs, and you know, and walking over to me is, holy shit, that's Mr. Rogers. And he said, thank you very much. It was a wonderful performance. Everyone did a magnificent job. And you shake his hand, and it's just, thank you, Mr. I mean, what can you say? It's Mr. Rogers. You know,
yeah.
Like, wow. Thank you.
Another icon, man. Yeah. Two icons, Romero and Rogers.
You see what everybody else says when they meet Mr. Rogers. Dude, you're fucking awesome, man.
That is what I said to him, actually.
Oh, man. So Iron City Ass Kickers, what is it? How come we haven't seen it before? Why is Cryptic Pictures like, hey, we're distributing it, and then we could go from there? Like, how did this come about, JP? Because you wrote it.
Yes, it's one of the first dominoes that started to fall is that I was involved in pro wrestling as kind of like my weekend job.
Right.
Because I don't play a musical instrument. I don't play golf. So on the weekends, to take up my time, I was involved in this sideshow wrestling promotion, this independent wrestling promotion. George knew about it. He didn't, you know. His son, his youngest son, Andrew, would come out and see the shows. So he liked it a lot. So George knew I was involved with it. But then it was after a time that he and I were in Los Angeles developing projects, because a couple times out of the year, we'd go from Pittsburgh to L.A. for a few months at a time, just so he could be closer to the stuff and get more jobs and things like that. But this was the thing that led to ICA was a particularly grueling time in L.A., which was very much a disappointment, to say the least. It was the development of Resident Evil, where George was ultimately betrayed, deceived, and lied to. So after a few months, once we got back to Pittsburgh and had nothing to show for it, it was pretty quickly after that, within a couple of days, he's like, we should do a wrestling thing. So I think he was doing that because he was like ginger and wasabi for the brain. He had just been very disappointed with the development of Resident Evil. We get back to Pittsburgh, kind of catch our breath, and he just wanted to clear the palate. It's like, let's do a wrestling thing.
Oh, that's good. It's so sad that he got screwed, you know. In I can't imagine even flying out there, because it always seemed like, you know, just the whole fish out of water thing, because you're not in that, you know, Hollywood. I mean, I was there once, and I remember my friends like, so you're in Hollywood? I'm like, yeah, what a shithole. You know, it was just like, you know, it's like it was really like, this is it, you know? And, you know, it's such a closed shop. And I can imagine, like, here comes this guy from the Pittsburgh area, and it's like, you know, I could see them not just giving a damn about any of
the
successes.
There's a famous story. I forget who the writer is, but this, he happened to be in L.A., and he was talking to him. He said, George, what are you going? He said, I got to go for a meeting. You want to come with me? So he went to a meeting at some executive's office. George is going to pitch something. And George, when he's pitching something, he gets up and he acts out, you know, the helicopter.
Yeah.
Monster and whatever. And so he's up doing this, and the phone rings. And the guy says, hold on, George. Yeah. Yeah. It takes a call. So George, okay, goes back into his spiel. Phone rings again. Three times this happens. And George finally turns to the writer and says, let's go. And they turned around and walked out. And the writer was like, really? Just go? And George's like, yeah. And they walked out. And the guy's like, George, come back. And just kept walking. He said, I'm not cut out for this Hollywood shit, man.
Yeah. That's disrespectful on every level, man. That's just disgusting. And, well, screw Hollywood, man. I mean, look at all the great. No, really, look at all the great stuff that you know, Mr. Romero did. I mean, my favorite's The Crazies. You know, I just like love that. Still freaks me out watching that one.
He used to give me this funny look. I would say to him every time, George, every time I see you, I'm going to tell you how much I love The Crazies, and he would go, I was like, no, really. I know it's rough, but it's a good fucking movie, and it's a precursor to Dawn of the Dead. You know, it's a dry run for Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
George was a humble guy.
Always.
All around. He never, oftentimes, I recall, I think it was you, JB, that once mentioned that you guys were at a convention. Or no, maybe I saw this in the, they recently did a retrospective of him at the University of Pittsburgh, where his archives are kept. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked George, no, I know who it was. It was Sean Tiedemann, the editor for Iron City Ass Kickers. That's where I heard this story, who had said that he and George were at a convention once, and George was looking around like, why am I even here? And Sean's looking at him like, you're fucking George Romero. What are you talking about? And he's like, I kind of feel out of place. People aren't going to recognize me. They're not going to know my work and so forth. I mean, he was really a true independent filmmaker. And
Oh, yeah. I have to tell you, the George Romero Foundation, for which I am currently the artistic director, it's a very grassroots organization put together by George's widow, Suzanne de Roche Romero. And Suze said, you know, literally on his deathbed, she said, well, what do you think about your life and your career? And he said, nobody gives a shit. And she said, fuck you. She's going to prove him wrong. that's the foundation, you know. But he always had that. He was so modest, almost, like you said, JB, self-effacing. You know, he was like almost painfully, you know, too modest. It was like, Jesus, don't give me credit for that thing I did. Well, you did that, but no, it's all right, you know.
Oh, man.
Some people just don't want that kind of, don't want to bask in that light. A lot of people do, you know, that don't deserve to, and a lot of people that deserve to don't want to, and George is one of those.
Yeah, because he did not have the ego to, he didn't have the insecurity or the ego that he needed to fuel that. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, other people just like, people love me, people love me, give me love. He wasn't like that. He definitely wasn't like that. You know?
Oh, man. I was supposed to meet him, and I was in, you know, at a convention in Seattle, and I passed it up because I was leaving Seattle, and I'm like, I'll catch him on the East Coast because he's going to be coming there next, and then he soon passed on, and I was like, you know, I felt awful because I didn't get a chance to meet him. So, I mean, he still lives on in all of you and what you're doing and creating, and what fueled you to, like, unleash Iron City Ass Kickers now after all these years?
Well,
someone fielded it. Someone fielded it.
among the things for which I do for the foundation, one of them is to occasionally read and respond on Twitter. And so I saw a tweet from JB saying, hey, please consider Iron City Ass Kickers, this lost project. And so unbeknownst to JB, I said, hey, Suze, you know, we made this thing back in. And she was like, cool, let's do something with it. Or actually, JB, Mark said, let's do something with it because we just had kind of a reunion show. I said, let's do a little reunion broadcast because we have the foundation has the Garf Network now, which is a series of video broadcasts. We have a big Knight Riders month coming up in April, 40th anniversary of Knight Riders. We have Ed Harris coming for that one. But
nice.
We did just kind of like, you know, let's watch this silly thing and let's have fun. We'll get JB on the air. And Mark and I were kind of like, this is fun. Let's, you know, why not? But
we realized
that after that broadcast, people went nuts.
Definitely put that in context, Chris, as to the event that was taking place for which we had the reunion, which was July. It was in remembrance of George's.
Death. That was the day. That was the day he passed. Yeah. So that was. We tried to turn it into a positive thing instead of saying, "Oh, George died today."
Right.
Well, let's make it something.
But it wasn't that. It was 2 years after he passed.
2 years after, yeah. So, but we said for an event, we'll do something fun. We'll dig up this video that we shot. And we all forgot how much fun it was. You know, I hadn't seen it in 15 years on VHS, maybe.
Right.
Thank God Sean found these beautiful high 8 copies that are much cleaner.
Cool.
But that was it.
So during that broadcast, basically, somebody mentioned in the chat room, you know, hey, where can I get a copy of this? And I, seeing that in the chat, I jokingly said, well, you know, Cryptic Pictures is going to distribute this just off the cuff.
Drink and tweet, Mark. Don't drink and tweet.
And so the next day, people hunted me down, I guess, because on the broadcast, it had my name listed along with crypticpictures.com in the name tag. And I started getting all these emails from folks saying, hey, you know, you said you'd be distributing. So where's the copy? Where can I buy a copy? At which point I thought, holy cow. So I contacted Chris and I was like, man, I think we have to distribute it now because we said we would. And
yeah, you have no choice. Yeah.
And Chris called me
and I found my VHS copy of it. And I texted JB and said, wow, what do we do with this thing? And then, of course, I had to call Suze because, you know, JB and George were the producers of the project and George Romero is no longer with us. So I called Suze and said, you know, George and JB did this wrestling thing, you know, 20 minutes long and no one ever saw it. She's like, that's cool. JB can do what he likes with it. Of course, he's welcome to. Awesome. That's his project. She was wonderfully gracious about it. And so we're giving the proceeds of the DVDs and VHSs as to benefit the foundation and the estate, the George Romero estate.
Fantastic. 100%.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the estate and what it's like, you know, beside, you know, what is it? Why?
The Garf itself is it's a 501c nonprofit foundation. Its aim and goal is to celebrate and promote the work of George, you know, his work, his legacy, his influences, and also to help continue to inspire future filmmakers and future artists and creative people of all endeavors, because that's what George did. He was a creator. He was a creative spirit. And so that's, you know, and he never let Hollywood keep him down, except for that one period where he was shackled to the typewriter, you know, by contract, and he was miserable. But that was it. It's sort of to carry on. And again, because of what, you know, he told Suze, like I said, he said, nobody gives a shit. Well, we'll show you that everyone gives a shit. And there's a lot of people giving a shit now. We finally got, you know, I think we're close to 2,500 followers on Twitter, finally. And Facebook, we have, you know, it's 7,000 or 8,000 followers. So it's getting there. The GARF is getting bigger. And, of course, we're working with the University of Pittsburgh.
Right.
They have a horror studies center, which is unique in the university system, as far as I know, but it's brilliant. There's Professor Adam Lowenstein. They call him Dr. Horror. If you've seen the American Nightmare documentary, he's in that a lot, but brilliant guy. And it's, you know, it falls under the, I don't know if it's humanities, sociology, or literature, but all of the above, I would think.
It should.
And there's a sort of working group that we have meets every 2 weeks, and how can the GARF help the university and vice versa. I will let you in on a secret that I'm sculpting another bust. This is a bust of Dwayne Jones, who was a graduate of the University of Pittsburgh. And the GARF offered a Pioneer Award, which we offer every year to filmmakers, certain people, actors. Last year's was Bill Cardill. He received the first Pioneer Award. And so Dwayne received posthumously this time. His sister, Marva Jones Brooks, accepted the award for him. And she was city attorney of Atlanta for many years, but she's still around. She's a wonderful lady.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But yeah, I'm working another bust of Dwayne for the university, so that'll be there eventually too.
And beautiful. And just as a just not many people know that Lori Cardill, Bill Cardill's daughter, is in Iron City Ass Kicker.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I showed Iron City Ass Kickers to Suze Romero, and she was like, "Where was Lori?" I said, "She was right dead center." You know, I had to rewind it. She was like, "That's Lori," because she had short red hair. You know, nobody recognized her.
Oh man! Well, I can't wait to buy a copy. I mean, that's for sure. Wow, that's
I'm
excellent.
Sure, Mark will give you 11% off.
I'll wait till he writes a tweet about it, so I can hold him to it.
You know, on top of GARF, you know, on top of the, they do a lot more. I mean, they do film restoration. They recently restored Night of the Living Dead to a 4K press.
Wow.
For the 50th anniversary, they were able to finally locate a copy of the amusement park.
I was just going to ask that.
Amusement park is the big, yeah. The GARF didn't do the restoration. That was a company called Indie Collect.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but they're involved in film restoration.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, the amusement park was restored also. And there's a big Dawn of the Dead box set was just released by Second Sight Films in the UK.
Mm.
A new version of The Crazies has just came out in, I think, Germany, I want to say. But it's, you know, this stuff is, it's never ending. And so we try and stay on top of it.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
GARF offers scholarships to independent filmmakers, mm-hmm. on top of the Pioneer Award, which they give out yearly, film restoration. I mean, they really kind of got their hands dipped in quite a few pots.
And ultimately, Suze wants to build a horror studies center, like a huge museum of horror here in Pittsburgh. And that's a brilliant idea. You know, we're all
It's a brilliant idea. You're right.
Yeah.
Let me know how I can help, guys. You know, I'm serious.
We will, certainly. If you know any investors with discretionary funds that want a couple million bucks opening a museum, then by
right now,
Bill will share those after he gets them to invest in his upcoming movie.
I hope.
Which reminds me, folks, congratulations to Bill. Yes, your host, for recently winning your screenwriting award. What did you get?
It was a finalist at Fourth Dimension Independent Film Festival, which is in Bali, and no one can go because of the friggin' quarantine. So,
hoorah!
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And it was funny because I put together a pitch deck, and then it's like I found out I'm a finalist. I'm like, hey, thanks for helping my pitch deck out. So, you know, so.
Hey, congratulations, man. That's huge.
Yeah, thank you. And I made it so we could be, it's seven people, one room. And I'm like, I had budget in mind when I wrote it, and it took about 2 years to write it because I was like, okay, I have seven people, one room. What the hell's going on? You know, so it was like, what is, you know,
that's Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, pretty. Yeah, well, yeah, well, no,
but 12 Angry Men.
Yeah,
yeah, that's obviously it's like, you know, The Man from Earth. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie.
Man from Earth.
Yeah, Jerome Bixby, his son directed it. It was one. He wrote a lot of Twilight Zone episodes. His son did it. His son took his father's script, and it's pretty much Tony Todd stars in it.
You know, I gotta see
it. Oh, it's fantastic! Because I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, something's wrong. Something's wrong. What's wrong with it? And I'm like, what's wrong is you're not supposed to do a movie where there's just people standing around talking heads. But it's so amazing
that it worked.
It worked. It was it's a beautiful film, but. So anyway, that enough about me. We got to go. We're going all over the place, but we have to get to Mortal Remains. What's up with that? Found footage film. JB was in it as well. You guys were in it. Actually, it was so funny because Johnny and I, we sat down on a couch and we watched this thing and we're like, holy shit. You know, because it was just so intense and very chilling. And I wasn't joking when I said it's one of the best found footage films ever made. It's really phenomenal, and it really got to us in our gut. And I know we've mentioned it a lot on the show. We do often because it, you know, people need to know about it. But you're sort of reaching a benchmark number with this thing. Tell us about it.
Yeah, about 2 years ago, I was talking with a very good friend of mine who works over at Sony Pictures. And we were talking about a couple of different projects, and I mentioned Mortal Remains, and he was like, Mortal Remains? Good God, that thing came out in 2013. Why are you still pushing Mortal Remains? And I said, well, for one reason and one reason only, I set a goal for Chris and I that we would have 1 million downloads, streams, or sales of that darn thing before I would finally put it to rest. And we are very, very close to reaching that benchmark. So I have a feeling come October, we'll finally hit it because of Amazon Prime. We always get a boost right around the horror holidays, right around Halloween.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, so it looks like that'll be the time when it kind of hits. And, you know, finally. Since that one was released in 2013, Chris and I have been battling back and forth, as artists often do, on what the second one should be.
Yeah.
And didn't really come to a final conclusion until 5 years after the fact. So around 2018, when we released the film digitally,
right.
And we did that through art, we had to establish Cryptic Pictures distribution in order to do that, because when we were in Los Angeles and we screened at the Dick Clark Studios, we weren't offered any deals that we were very interested in. I'll never forget, there was a moment when we had an interview with somebody and we got into the car and Christian is coddling a copy of the DVD in his arms. And he was like, I will never give this away for nothing.
Well, no, because somebody stole a copy at the, that one convention. Remember there was a copy on top of a backup copy that we had, and somebody walked off with it.
What an,
so it's like, going to turn up on Pirate Bay.
Oh man, that's crazy.
In any case,
I've been checking though. It's technically, it's still not on Pirate Bay, by the way.
So no, it is not.
Not that popular yet.
but it's not on popcorn. But the fact of the matter is that in 2018, when we finally decided to release digitally, we decided to do it ourselves.
Right.
And the day and age when you can do that, I'm not sure we could have done that in 2013, but we waited 5 years because I wasn't about to give the revenue away to just anybody. I wanted to try and retain as much of the profits as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started Cryptic Picture Distribution.
And fortunately, Mark was looking for distribution in an era where new inventions are springing up like weekly. And so by waiting long enough and saying no to these guys, we're like, yeah, we'll buy it for $1,500 and call it done. You know, this platform emerged that said, yeah, you can put it on whatever you want. Just, you know, as long as you pass our quality control thing, boom. And so Mark said, forget it. Who are these other guys? Because all these little places that are distributors on the back of your DVD at Walmart, it's some guy in a house in Ohio, and he's just buying people's films online,
sells them
to some other platform, and that calls himself a distributor. And that's, you know, they don't have to even be in the building anymore.
Yeah, I actually saw a distributors panel a few years ago, and they had like one of the new young kids doing it, and they had this guy who's been in it for 40 years and all, and they were all pretty much saying, we have no idea what the hell is going on anymore. It's just insanity. And that means since we don't know what's going on anymore, it's bad for the artists, it's bad for everybody because the money's just going to be like lost. And
we seem to hit, whenever Chris and I get the itch and we start producing something, it seems like Hollywood is going through this massive implosion.
Mm-hmm.
When we started in 2013, we met with, and I had pitched it to Sony Pictures, and they said, well, why don't you just go ahead and make it yourselves and then just send it to us. And so at that point, Chris had written a documentary, hadn't written a found footage film. And right. Then they also said in their liner notes, they were like, you should turn it into a found footage film, because at the time, Paranormal Activity was really, really hot. So we converted the film to a found footage film, to Chris's chagrin. And of course, if you're going to do that, who do you meet with? You meet with the godfather of found footage. So we called up Ed Sanchez, director of the Blair Witch Project, said, Ed, we'd like to meet with you. And Ed, first thing out of Ed's mouth, I got two things to tell you. Number one, there is no seed money in Hollywood. So you're going to have to do this. You have to finance it yourself.
Yeah.
And don't ask me. And two, he was like, make sure to cover your asses, because you're going to get sued at some point. It's going to happen, especially if it takes off. They're going to come out of the woodwork, and everyone's going to want a piece of the pie. And so we incorporated to make sure that we protected ourselves and converted it into a found footage film. And, you know, by 2018, I'm frustrated and like, that's it. Damn it. We're going to release it ourselves. So we did. And that's when the real boost, I mean, up to that point, we were just relying on DVD sales. But after we went digital is when the real influx of viewership came in.
Awesome.
And we get calls all the time from independent filmmakers who want to, you know, get on Zoom and chat with us. And I just talked with a guy last week who was making his own found footage film up in New York. And, you know, he's just like, I can't believe this. I'm actually talking with you. And I was like, our door is open to any and all independent filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
We were happy to share with you what we learned. It's not proprietary. It's just that nobody else wants to tell you. They want to charge you for it. And we don't. Okay. You know what I mean? Right. And that's not our game.
One of the instances where it's sort of Cryptic and the Garf can work hand in hand, because we're doing the same sort of thing, fostering students like that.
Mm-hmm.
George Romero filmmaking program. The Douglas Education Center has that, and there are other initiatives here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Jake, you guys, I have to apologize. I'm not going to detonate the podcast, but I have to duck out. I just got a text from my brother that said they've taken my dad to hospice.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry.
So, yeah. Well, we'll find out. He's been in and out of the hospital for the past couple of weeks, so I'm going to call.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry.
But
Keep us posted, man. I certainly will.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for having me on, and I'm sorry if I won't be there for the rest of the next half.
No, we'll catch up another time, man. Just take care of
yourself. I love you, brother. All the best.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
So, now, to fast forward to Iron City Ass Kickers. So, in 2018, of course, is everybody frozen?
No, I'm here.
Everybody there?
Okay. Everybody's good. JP was just standing perfectly still, man. He's just like...
So, in 2018, we established Cryptic Pictures Distribution. We just opened up a division of the company.
Yeah.
And that is kind of what set us up for our ability to be able to distribute Iron City Ass Kickers come 2020, 2021. And so when I was half joking when I said, hey, Cryptic Pictures will distribute it. I mean, I hadn't even thought about who might own the rights, or I hadn't gone through any of that process. I was just throwing that out haphazardly. And then, you know, Chris is like, I'm seeing the emails coming in, dude, I think we may have to release this. And I was like, well, let's find out who has the rights and where, you know. And so that led us to both JB and DeSouze.
Yeah.
And JB was kind enough to trust us, Chris and I, with, you know, the distribution of this.
Do you really trust him, JB? Do you really trust him?
Dan, I say with complete humility, it's like Mark's been the greatest champion for ICA out there. Mm-hmm. Chris, definitely. So, Cryptic Pictures Distribution, I am totally happy with. Occasionally Mark and I will have discussions that border on different things, but complete faith. He has been the champion of this project from the very beginning.
Awesome.
Just the idea to distribute, and then ultimately finding the original source material, finding the original editor after two decades. So, yeah, much love to Cryptic Pictures, Cryptic Distribution for sure. And much love to Mark, of course.
Awesome. God bless you, man. God bless you. Awesome. So we decided to dive into this, and it's been a 9-month process of, like JB said, trying to find the original press so that we had a top quality DVD restoration provided. Mm-hmm. We decided to go vintage VHS also for collectors.
Sure, sure.
You know, we connected with the Garf and we said, look, we'd like to do sort of a premiere release party of sorts and bring on the cast, and with JB's help. Part of being in the George Romero family is people stay in touch. They, mm-hmm. you know, they're very tight. And so JB was able to connect with almost all of the cast,
right.
Which was dynamite. And so we were able to get them onto this reunion show, and which Garth hosted. And, sales have been great. The key thing here for us was, you know, if we're going to do this, we want to make sure that we donate something to, we don't want to do this and then find out, oh, we just broke even. Or worse, we lost money on the venture. And so everything that we learned in all the money we spent establishing Cryptic Pictures distribution finally paid off, because we were profitable on our second day. We knew that we were going to be able to make a nice donation to George's estate. And people are continuously buying copies of both the DVD and the VHS. And anybody out there that's interested, just go to crypticpictures.com. You'll see Iron City Ass Kickers on the homepage in the top scroll bar. Just click on it. It'll take you right to the page. You can order your copy there. And it was, in essence, this – and I actually worked on Iron City Ass Kickers. I was a cameraman. Chris called me this was 98, in May mm-hmm. of 98. And Chris calls me up and says, hey, Mark, I want you to come to Pittsburgh. I've got a gig for you. And so he said, just make sure to bring your cameras. They were filming this on – high eight millimeter.
Wow.
And he knew that I had several 8mm cameras. And so I packed them up and headed up to Pittsburgh, not knowing what I was in for. I literally got out of the car. I was dressed in khakis and a pink shirt. And Chris is like, quick, get your cameras. Let's go. Let's go. And the next thing I know, standing in front of George Romero, he's giving me the once over, like, okay, khakis and a pink shirt, whatever.
That's awesome.
And I'm
man.
Like, I'm embarrassed because I'm not in blacks or anything like that. And I'm, you know, yelling at Chris, I can't, what, why didn't you tell me this is what we were going to be doing? And the next thing That's I know, awesome. I'm like shooting JB in the ring, fighting Big Papa Gator. And that was, for me, the beginning of Iron City Ass Kickers. And That's so awesome. From there, when we decided to release it some 22 years later, I was familiar with the project in that sense. I had a personal copy of my own. I knew what it was about. I knew how we could possibly advertise this. And so when we decided to do this release party for Garf, I was like, what we really need is a professional wrestler, a big name professional wrestler to come on and kind of help promote this and mm-hmm. bring in some wrestling eyes, because this was out of George's, you know, typical genre.
Yeah.
It wasn't a zombie movie. It wasn't a horror film. And a lot of people just didn't recognize it for that reason. They were like, George Romero never made a wrestling short, you know, but he did. Basically, it was a TV pilot.
Yeah.
And so we got, Sid Vicious through a contact that I have that I established within Iron City Ass Kickers, in fact. And Sid came on and talked about, you know, life as a professional wrestler, what it's like working mm-hmm. in the minors and working your way up to being a pro. And you know, it's a 6-time heavyweight world wrestling champion there on the show. And so, you know, again, everything that we learned from how to promote and where to put the money, and so that you're not wasting it, because, you know, when you're doing it for the first time, you throw money at everything and see what sticks.
Basically. Yeah.
And so, I'm grateful that just super grateful that JB was like, yeah, sure, we'll trust you with this project. Let's see what you can do. It's been a joy. I mean, it helped to bring a lot of attention to Cryptic Pictures. God bless all the George Romero fans out there who are now like, oh, Cryptic Pictures, cool. You know, again, for any independent filmmakers out there, our door is always open. We're happy to share whatever stories we can and ideas and thoughts. And, mm-hmm. you know, we do a lot of stuff. We have a blog. We do a podcast. We do the whole nine yards to try and help promote them.
And you're also doing Mortal Remains too.
That's right. Duo, as you like to say, Mortal Remains 2, Electric Boogaloo.
You know it. I have a funny feeling it's not going to be a laugh fest.
Mortal Remains 2 is the follow-up to the award-winning Mortal Remains. When we released Mortal Remains, we took it on a festival run, not expecting anything, and walked away with four awards on the festival circuit, which was a real shocker to us. Not that we won four awards. We thought, hey, I'm in some of the smaller fests, maybe we'll win something. But the fact that we won in four different categories kind of shocked Chris and I, and it encouraged us to continue promotion and so forth. And the fan base that we built is international. And so for us, it was the harassment that we've been getting for over the years of, are you guys going to do a follow-up? I mean, you know, I'm tired of watching the original over and over and over again. And so we thought, we will do one, but we don't want to just do it. We're not doing it to do it. If we're going to do it for the same reason we did the original, there's got to be a great story. It's got to be worth telling.
Oh, it's such a great story, man, the original.
We've got to look forward to having fun doing it. And so Chris and I are headbangers, man. We've known each other for 30 years. Each of us thinks that the other's idea is, I got a better idea than that, buddy. And we're constantly butting heads. And so it takes 5 years when you're in that environment to kind of agree on something and go, this is it. But when you do, it's been so strained that it's pure. I mean, it's first press.
Right.
And it is delicious. And so we finally were able to come down come to some agreement with regards to the storyline. So we're really excited about that. It'll be coming out in August of 2022, which will be marking the 50th anniversary of Carl Atticus's death. For anybody who doesn't know Carl Atticus, go to carlatticus.com.
That is friggin' gold right there. When you have a premiere in Pittsburgh, I will drive to see you guys. Hopefully meet JB in person, too.
Hoorah!
Have a friggin' blast. Oh, awesome, man. Awesome. I haven't been out that way in a long time, but no, I'm really looking forward to it. And I appreciate you guys taking time with this, because you see other people rush to do their second film and it's like the sophomore jinx. And it's like, oh man, you should have just stayed home. You know, it's like, this is garbage. Now I have to pick yourself up again, you know?
So, not these guys, not Chris and Mark. No.
We've been active doing, other stuff. We have a film short that we produced and that I'm in and I directed, and we're going to be releasing that long before Mortal 2 comes out. And we're also executive producing a few things aside from Iron City Ass Kickers, which we also executive produced. We just got an official selection nomination for the International Environmental Film Festival for a short that we invested in called Crude Oil. That
was brought to our attention, man.
You know, and it's all about helping the environment. So, I mean, we're open to all, we're lovers of cinema. And when we see something that's really, really good and that's worth investing in, we definitely, jump on board. We're helping Image 987, which is JB's company now that he runs his brother. We're helping that company with their distribution and festival run for a short that they just did called Dirty Hands, man.
Awesome. JB, so tell us about that. What else you have going on? Because I know you're busy.
Dirty Hands, man. We go back in front of the camera for another short subject.
Mm-hmm.
Memorial Day weekend. We're going to shoot in Western Pennsylvania again. Three to go. So, but the partnership that we have with Mark and Cryptic, for sure, has been fantastic. Even going back to Mortal Remains, it's like the one thing it would be remiss. He's gone right now, but Chris was just such an amazing, gentle director on my time shooting my short stuff for Mortal Remains. He was entirely patient, even though I knew he was dealing with so many different things from different directions, from crew or cast or whatever.
Right.
And like, I would have lost my patience. He never did. He was always kind of in control, in command. And that's something that George did on set. And that's something that Chris did shooting Mortal Remains.
See, that's what I was going to ask you, you know, and it's great that aura that, you know, Mr. Romero unleashed, you know, is affecting other people in the right way. Because I've been on set where directors are like, I remember even, I saw this, it was just a trailer this guy was shooting and he was hired to shoot and he was ultimately fired. But the crew was scared to death, and I'm like, you know, you guys should murder him. You know, I can't do anything because I'm just here observing. But you guys should really like take that drone and slam it into his head. This guy was hideous. It was like he was a caricature of what you would think a crazy director should be. But it's so good to hear that you had such a great time on set, and that, you know, it mirrored what, you know, Mr. Romero put out there. That's fantastic. That's excellent.
Yeah, I admire the skills that others have that I know I do not have. And that level of patience and maintaining focus and clear vision is something Chris had on Mortal Remains. I would not have had that. I would have, you know. Yeah. I would have gone to like zero to sociopath in about 2.5 minutes of listening to that stuff. But he kept a nice even keel. Shot the footage, made the day, so yeah.
Well, and the end result is fantastic. I'm serious.
I agree.
Yeah,
love them.
Yeah, me too. It really got to me. If you haven't seen Mortal Remains, you have to do it. So, you know, gentlemen, you've been on a while. You know, my usual question. I think you guys covered so much. My usual question is, what hasn't been asked of you? Like in this interview or any other interview that you would like to talk about, now's your time, or you could just have closing statements. I'd leave it to you.
Well, I don't know, JB. You want to chime in with?
Sure. Yeah.
A pitch for Iron City Ass Kickers, man.
The one thing that Romero fans who may not necessarily be wrestling fans are going to like about Iron City is that they get to see George as a character himself. Most time he spent on camera and not in an interview subject. He played a fictional character, but it was like George slightly amped up. All of his stuff was improv, but he knew what the message he wanted to deliver. He knew how to contribute to the story. And that's like, it's like essentially sitting at the bar and listening to George talk. That's the good thing about Iron City, because you get to see George. The other thing, the question that I've never been asked, and I'm not going to answer it right now, is what happened with Resident Evil? That's a discussion for another day. But yeah, I was there. I saw the bodies. I knew everything that went on with that. So hey, Billy, I'm not passing this off on you. Maybe no. I'll revisit it, or maybe you might as well.
Oh, because, you know, JP, you could come on any time without these guys. Seriously, the invite is open, man. Anytime you want to come
back. I want to tune in to that one. Yeah. You know, I've never bothered to ask you because I know it's a sensitive topic. But every time you bring it up, I'm like, God bless it. Would you just tell me finally what the hell happened?
I'm going to get 10,000, you know, messages now. You know, people like, when's he coming on? When's he going to tell that story? So I'm gonna have to like beg you to come on at some point, man.
Oh man, I'm not playing the I have a secret game, even though I have a lot of dirty secrets about that. But there's a lot of people who did that man very wrong, and I'll name names for sure. But it takes a longer time than what we have for this one. Okay.
Well, you let me know. You have we'll talk. You know, you come on. And seriously, the door is always open to you. Even, you know, Mark and Christian, you know. Anytime you guys want to come back on, it's fine. But JB, don't think you're one and done. You know, I'm here, so please come back.
I'll take you up on that.
All right, thank you very. I appreciate that very much.
I'll be tuning into that podcast episode. Let me tell you, because I honestly, I've never poked, because I thought, you know what, JB brings that up, and every time he brings it up, he gets fired up, and I'm like, There's some stuff still simmering there, and I better not crack that egg, you know? So I just keep my mouth shut. But I've oftentimes asked Chris, because I assume Chris knows, and he's like, oh, it was awful. And I was like, what does that mean? and he's like, ask JB. And I'm like, back to square one. So I'll be tuning in for that. I'll be tuning in that. But listen, for all you fans out there who follow Bill is just a wonderful guy. I don't know if many of you know the story behind behind how Bill came to be in the realm of cryptic pictures. Do you want to tell that story? Would you like me to tell that story?
I remember being pissed off.
JB's going to want to know this story. Please.
Please, I'm dying to hear.
So these guys, you know, Mark and Christian contact me, and they're talking about this this filmmaker named Carl Atticus from the 70s, and they're telling me this story, and they wanted me to do, because I was a professor at the time at Kutztown University in Pennsylvania, they asked if I could do some research and whatnot on him and to validate this guy. And within like 15 minutes, I'm like, this is bullshit. I'm like, who are these guys? What do they want? And I know I have the original email somewhere. I laid everything out of all my research, all of my points that just like poked like a million holes into this guy. And then I found out why they were, you know, what this really meant. Because they were hoping, you know, you take it from there, Mark.
So at that point, I contacted Chris and I said, so this guy Bill got back to us and he's freaking pissed.
Because you worked him.
And I said, Chris is like, oh, that means he probably figured out that, you know, he's the jig is up, man. And I was like, well, shit, I don't want anybody to be angry. And so I contacted Bill and I said, dude, yes, here's why we asked you to do this research and, so on and so forth. Long story short, we ended up sending you a check, if I'm not mistaken, and some merch. And we just said, look, here's some payment for all your sweat, blood, and tears that you just went through, because you were angry, man. You were like, this is a wild goose chase, you dickhead.
No, I didn't go, you dickhead. It was a professional email, but I was like, yeah, but I pretty much said, yeah, you're dickheads, this is bullshit. Yeah, right. Okay, pretty much. In a professional manner.
Long story short, Bill was very extremely kind after that. He was like, wow, you guys, like, you obviously asked, you weren't yanking my chain. You asked, you had a purpose behind your reasoning for asking me to do this. And you've made good on my time and effort by sending in this merch and so forth, as a consolation of sorts. And he said, you know what? You guys are golden in my book, and we've been friends ever since. In fact, Bill is going to be in Mortal Remains Part 2. He has a cameo bit with a few other podcasters. So keep your eyes open, folks. Yeah, keep your eyes.
My Boogaloo moment. Yeah, awesome.
But for all of you who follow my Boogaloo, for all of you who follow Bill, though, the man is genuine. He's the real deal. And we can't thank you enough for all your support and for having us on today to talk a little bit about Iron City Ass Kickers and remember George Romero a little bit and spread the word on Mortal Remains. We really appreciate all the support from all the years. I mean, this dates back to before 2013 when we released.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, I love it. I love you guys. And I love the quality of what you do, because I think so many people, who want to be filmmakers, and now everything's so simple. Hey, I can take my phone. Let's make a movie. And it's like, no, don't make a movie. You know, like, study craft, you know, care about quality. And that's why I'm so appreciative of you guys taking all this time before you're making Mortal Remains 2, because, and you've told me a little bit about the story, and I don't want to know any more, but I remember loving what you were telling me. And I was like, this is brilliant. So I'm appreciative. And, JB, it's such a pleasure to meet you. This is great. I love you guys.
I want to thank you very much. Mark, it's always great to see you, my friend. I will definitely be talking and doing business and being friends.
Awesome.
But Bill, make no mistake, man. This is an honor and a pleasure for me. It's a high water mark to be with you, because your name, your show, your reputation precedes you in a very good way.
Oh, man. Damn. Are you single? No, I'm playing. I was just like, man, my whole week's been made, and it just started. Thank you so much. You're too kind. So, well, let's do this. Let's do this so you guys can get out and enjoy life and get some food or whatever. JB, where can people find you, about what you're doing? Can you give us some stuff?
Image987 on Twitter, @Image987. That's the most up to date with what's going on I'm relocating personally from Texas back to the East Coast in a number of weeks. But yeah, Image 987. That's the most up-to-date information on me.
Awesome. Fantastic. And
CrypticPictures.com/ICA.
Bam! All right. Got it in. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, folks, if you want to reach out to us, you can always reach us through CrypticPictures.com. You can learn more about Mortal Remains at MortalRemainsMovie.com. We're on Twitter at Cryptic Pictures. We're on Instagram at Cryptic Pictures. Friend me on Facebook, Mark Ritchie, R-I-C-C-H-E. Door is always open for all you indie filmmakers out there and fans. We love conversing with you folks, and you guys provide us the inspiration to keep going. So thank you all very, very much.
And gentlemen, thank you so much for this episode. This is about 10 times more than what I expected it to be. In so many ways, not just the conversation, but the elements of it, the George A. Romero Foundation and just all that you've done to not only keep the spirit of George A. Romero alive, but, how just your genuine concern about, filmmaking and telling stories and just being decent people in a sometimes crazy world. So I'm very appreciative of that. So thank you both. Everyone knows you could find the Last Knock on CrashPalaceProductions.com, Spotify, iTunes, and I swear it's like 30 other places and I have no idea what they are. So just like punch in the Last Knock and we'll come up somewhere, I'm sure. So thank you both so much. I really appreciate this. And
thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Chat soon.
Yes, sir.